The scene on the second reading opens with the Jewish people, the former Israelite slaves or Hebrew slaves, having escaped the land of Egypt. Is there a problem with this? You're looking funny. No, it's fine. The Egyptian army is in hot pursuit. The raging reed or Red Sea is before them. There are mountainous passes on either sides, and the people lose their composure. They get really, really worried. The Pharaoh gets closer and closer, and the people can see as if the Egyptians are here to get them. There's no hope. Bad shape. Bad news bears. What do? They start davening. The problem, of course, with this notion that they start davening is that they clearly express a lack of faith. So if they have a lack of faith, why are they davening? Rashi tells us they just did what they, you know, what their ancestors did. They figured you're supposed to daven, but they didn't really mean it. They were just going through the motions. And they began to complain to Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, they were really unhappy. Vayemru al Moshe, chapter 14, verse 11, they said to Moshe, what was the big idea here? Was there some kind of lack of graveyards in Egypt? You had to bring us here? You had to bring us out to the desert to die? What'd you do to us? To go and take us out of Egypt. What chutzpah, what insolence you have. You took us out of Egypt to kill us? What's going on here? Now this is a funny expression. So Rashi explains it like this. Is that why you took us out of Egypt? What, because there wasn't enough graves? You planned to kill us? Kill us in Egypt. Why'd you have to bring us here to kill us? Lakachtonu misham, likover sham, that we should be buried there. So instead, lakachtonu misham, you took us from there in order to get us killed over here? Like, what was the big idea if you just planned to get us killed anyway? Now Rashi is saying it this way because he has to explain how mibli ein kvarim b'mitzrayim. Was there no graves so that you took us to be killed in the desert? Rashbam puts it a little different. Rashbam says, why do you bring us to a place where death is certain? In other words, as if to say, like the Sepharno says, even if the Egyptian army wouldn't be here, we'd be dead anyway. How are we going to survive? We're going to be in a desert. There's no food. There's nothing to drink. Like, what were you thinking? What were we thinking? Why did we follow you? I once saw, I don't remember who did this, but some logistics kind of guy who does these kind of numbers. He made a calculation of how many tractor trailers it would take to feed the Israelite nation. It was something like 30,000 tractor trailers a day to feed them. That's the logistics. You figure out 600,000 men between 20 and 60, then you have to have an equal amount of women. You took 1.2 million people, you gotta get the kids in. You got to get the older people in. You're talking 3 million people. 3 million people to feed them every single day. So as far as what you bring us here for? Now, what motivated their complaining? Everything was great. They were riding high. And somehow they were eating and somehow they were drinking and everything is fine. And then the Egyptian army's coming. And they said, 1 second. This crazy guy Moses, he brought us to the desert. First of all, the Egyptians are going to kill us. And even if they wouldn't, we'll die anyway. It's like death is certain. So they became all of a sudden very depressed, very despondent and angry. And they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Haloi zeh hadavar asher dibarnu elecha." It's exactly what we told you by Mitzrayim in Egypt. Lema, we said, "Chadal mimenu, leave us alone. We didn't ask you to come. We didn't ask for your help. V'navda as Mitzrayim, and we could just serve Egypt happily and be slaves the rest of our lives, at least stay alive. Ki toiv lanu avedes Mitzrayim. Yes, it's better to us to be slaves. We'd rather serve Egypt mimuseinu b'midbar than dropping dead in some desert somewhere." So we told this to you already. Now, where did they tell us? We don't have a record of them saying, "Toiv lanu chadal mimenu, leave us alone." So Rashi says, he asks a question actually. The Heichan Dibru. Where did they speak this way? So Rashi says, go back all the way to the beginning of the narrative. When Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron went to the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh said, "Oh, freedom you want. Lazy you are. I'll make life more difficult." So then Dasan and Aviram met Moshe Rabbeinu outside and they said, "Yere Hashem aleichem v'yishpet. May God see what you did. May he judge you for what you did. He should judge you because you made our lives that much worse. So now, all of a sudden, Dathan and Aviram have suddenly risen to prominence again. They were the prophets of doom before. Nobody listened to them because they were paupers. And, you know, when you have no money, nobody thinks your opinion is important. And now, all of a sudden, they said, you see, we said this, we predicted it, we told you then leave us alone, and nobody listened to us. And look where we are now. Ki toiv avoid Mitzrayim. We'd rather serve Egypt mimusenu. So Rashi goes into a whole grammatical exercise here on what mimusenu means, but I'm just going to leave you with the notion that it means we're going to die. Ki toiv lanu avoidus Mitzrayim. The Malbim says, clearly they said, we'd rather have a life of derision and disgrace than a death that is noble. We didn't need to die as free people. We'd rather stay alive as slave people. There's no reason for this. The whole exercise was exercise of fertility. We should have just stayed where we were while we were ahead. Moses has got a problem on his hands. Mutiny catches like wildfire. And all of a sudden, you have a Dathan and Aviram. Nobody was listening to him before, but now suddenly they've risen to prominence once again, and these are very, very well-spoken and outspoken individuals, and they start to whip up a mob around them, and it becomes a raging sea that's matched by a raging nation. Moshe Rabbeinu's got to do something. Moses does not avoid the people. The worst thing a leader could do when the Indians are roiling, the chief has got to address them. He says, you have, the crowd is out of control. Moshe Rabbeinu is now going to speak. So, word goes out, press conference in 15 minutes. All the Jewish people, all the Hebrews show up, they surround Moshe Rabbeinu. How exactly everybody heard him, I don't know. But this is the story. Moshe said to the nation, Al tira'u, stop it. Do not be fearful. Hisyatzvu, stand tall. Ura'u, and you will see, as Yeshua is Hashem, you will see the salvation of God. Asher yasa lechem ayim, what he will do for you today. Ki at she'ra'isim etz Mitzrayim, the way you see Egypt hayoim, loy seisifu le'ra'isim, you'll never see them like this again. This is their final hurrah. This is the last time they come out with any kind of strength and might. This is the last time you'll see them in that prideful way. Now, of course, we know Egypt rises again in the future, but it's actually a different civilization. This is the Hyksos civilization, and the Hyksos are destroyed, and the new country comes in, a new civilization comes in. They appropriate much of Egyptian culture and make it look like it's a continuation, but really it's called a new kingdom, and the pharaohs of that era never rise again. The culture and civilization of that era collapses entirely. You will not see them again. Ad olam, forever. This is the final jig. The jig is up, it's over. Rashi says, Ki asher ra'isim es Mitzrayim. For as you have seen Egypt, the Goymer, etc. Now, the first thing Rashi sets out to explain is Ki Asher, the word Asher. What does this mean, Asher? He says, Masher Isam Isam, that which you see them, Eine Allah Hayim. You see him now, you won't see him later. Hayim Hu Shara Isam Isam. Today you see them. In other words, Asher Isam is that which you're seeing them. You see them? Look well, then you're not going to see him again. This is it. Lo yisei sifoid, you're not going to see him again. Now the emphasis here on lo yisei sifo l'roisam oid, what is Moshe Rabbeinu trying to tell them? So Ramban says, it's almost like a command. He says, don't look at him again. Don't ever attribute importance to him. You made a big mistake just now. Don't do that again. Don't look at them and say, oh, look who's coming to get us. They're so mighty and strong. They're going to be going to overwhelm us. Don't look at them. Stop it. It ends here. God is going to deliver you. Stop looking at them. What will happen? Verse 14, Hashem yilochem lechem. God is going to do battle for you. The atem and you, tacharishon. Why don't you just be quiet? There are nicer ways of saying that and not nice ways of saying that. But Moshe Rabbeinu was pretty direct and pretty blunt. He says, can it? Enough. Hashem yilochem lechem, says Rashi. Lechem means bishvilechem, for you. V'chein, similarly, ki Hashem nilcham lohem, which is later on, in about 10 verses. When the Egyptians saw what was going on, they said, uh-oh, God is back. He's fighting for them again. V'chein, similarly, im lo'el terivun. This is the words of Job in the 13th chapter, where Eov says to his friends, Did you come to fight with me on God's side? Are you God's lawyers? You're defending God? Did I ask you to defend God? Which is like the dumbest thing anybody could do when somebody's sitting Shiva and somebody's miserable. And you come there and explain, no, it's okay. God knows what he's doing. You have said that I ask you. Did somebody ask you, did God ask you to be his lawyer? V'chein asher diber li. Similarly, this is not exactly the same, but similar in syntax. These are the words of Avram to Eliezer, his servant. And he says that God has spoken to me. But this is about the Shidduch of Yitzchak. And he says he's going to send his angel before you. V'chein ha'atam terivun labal. This is in the book of Judges, where Yoash speaks to those who want to kill Gidon because he smashed the altar of the idol Baal. He says, have you now become the Baal's foot soldiers? Are you his defenders? If he's a powerful deed, let him defend himself. So Rashi just brings you a bunch of examples where Hashem yilochem lochem doesn't mean God will fight with you, but lochem means bishvilchem, on your behalf. We have various examples of la'el terivon, asher dibali is not exactly the same, ha'atem terivon libal. All these examples are God is going to do battle on your behalf. And with this, the second reading comes to its conclusion. Now, why did Moshe Rabbeinu say, stop it, stop talking, I don't want to hear from you anymore? So according to Chizkuni, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm tired of your kvetching. Enough. Let's just stop the kvetching right now. I don't want to hear you say things like, why did you bring us out of Egypt? And what exactly was supposed to happen here? The Or HaChaim said, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just say, stop kvetching. He said, tacharishon. You know, forgive me. He said, shut up. No more. What was he saying? He didn't say, don't kvetch anymore. He said, don't even daven. I don't need you davening. Just be quiet. Just have faith and wait and see what God's going to do. Nobody asked for your participation at this point. Don't talk. Who asked you to talk now? It's like when you go through the border. Don't talk. Anything you say will be held against you. Don't talk. Just be quiet. Don't daven. Don't complain. Don't kvetch. Don't give me political commentary. I don't need talking heads. Just be quiet. You just stand and wait, and Hashem is going to deliver us. But of course, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to get instructions. You actually have to do something. Don't talk, but you got to do. And this is, as we'll hear, you know, the story that will continue to unfold. Now we have, actually, in the Mechilta, it identifies four different groups of people here. Four different elements within these raging mobs. And we're going to learn the Mechilta together now, and then we're going to see how this can apply in real time. Page Resh, Pei Dalet, Simen Yud Gimel. So in the bold print here on top, we have the text of the Mechilta, which is the Medrash Halacha that accompanies the first two books of the Torah. So the Mechilta says, Arba kitos nasu Yisrael al hayom. The Jewish nation divided into four groups at the sea. Achas emeres, one group was the suicide party. They said, Nipar layam, let's all commit mass suicide. We'll show them. They want to kill us, they won't kill us. We'll kill ourselves first. This is the Mitzada people. We're just going to kill ourselves, and that's all. Achas emeres, another group said, Nachzer leMitzrayim, submission. They were the submission party. They said, we are going now to resubmit and be your slaves again. Let's just go back to Egypt. Achas emeres, one party said, Nasa melchama kenegdon, let's go to war. That was the war party. Va'achas emeres, and one said, Nitzvavach kenegdon, we should pray now. They were the praying party. So we had four groups. One group was the suicide party. There was the submission party. Surrender, raise the white flag and go back. And then there's the party that says, fight till the death, fight till the last man. And then the last party said, we're just going to pray. We're just going to sit here and pray. The pacifist party. Whatever will happen, we'll pray. Wait for God to do something if he wants to do something. If not, that's also good. Whatever it's going to be, we're just going to pray till there's nothing left to, till we're out, we either aren't or till God saves us.
Three or four?
Four. Suicide. White flag, right? Surrender. The war party. Just fight till you're dead. And then the praying party. How do we know this? We could see it from Moshe's response. Moshe responded. This is the brilliance of a leader. Moshe responds in one sentence to four different parties. He silences everybody in one sentence. The one, he says, suicide is the answer. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you've got to be kidding. Just stand right there. Don't commit suicide. Soon you're going to see the salvation of God. The white flaggers, the people who wanted to submit and surrender. Moshe Rabbeinu said, are you kidding? To who are you going to surrender? The way you see Egypt, never seen them again. Surrender to who? There's nobody home. It's a mirage. Virtual reality. It looks like they have power. They'll be gone momentarily. The one who says, let's go and we're going to make a war. We're going to attack. Moshe Rabbeinu says, spare your bravery. Hashem Yilochem. God's going to do battle. Nobody asked you to do war. And then, the one that said, we're now going to sit down and have a big prayer rally. We're going to make demonstrations. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Atem Tachadushin, do me a favor. Just be quiet. Your demonstrations are not going to help anybody, even if they're prayer demonstrations. So that's what the Mechilta says. The Rebbe's commentary is as follows. Arba Kitas Eilu, these four groups, that had this huge divisiveness amongst them, all vociferously arguing, what should we do in this situation? How do we deal with Egypt who pursues us? Miatzogais, arba gishes shaynes lismoidis imhang migbulis, shematze befaneinu ha'ilam. This is actually, can be understood as, or seen as, the four different kinds of responses that people have today towards the challenges to Jewish life in our time. Egypt is coming. We feel it closing in around us. What do we do? Now, in order to understand this, to frame it right, you have to understand, you have to realize, Arba Kitas Eilu, these four groups, Noitzru La'achar Shebnei Yisrael Yotzu Kvar B'Mitzrayim. They didn't leave Egypt in four groups. These are four groups that developed later. They left Egypt as a united people. They were excited to follow Moses. That first day was great. The subsequent days was still kind of good, pretty good, following Moses. At this point, when they lose their composure, when Egypt is behind them, with the raging sea in front of them, with the mountain passes on either side, this is when they lose their composure, and this is when they splinter into four groups. What happened? What happened was they left Egypt, and then the Egyptians came after them. And therefore, b'teichem pnima, inside, they still felt that they were free people. They were no longer in Egypt. However, the pressures on the outside were pursuing them. They said, we're free now. For how much longer? For how much longer will we be free? We left Egypt behind. We're here now. We're alive today. Will we be around tomorrow to tell the story? This is the mindset. They're not talking to slave people. You're not talking to people in Egypt saying, how do we get out of the situation? They aren't in that situation. However, they do not see a friendly future. That's the issue. There's no friendly future. There is no tomorrow. There is no way out of this problem. We're good now. We're okay. But they won't be okay tomorrow. There is no continuity that we can see possible. And this is what people see all the screen about today, Jewish continuity. So what are you worried about? You're not alive today? Yeah, of course we're alive and we're living well and we have Jewish organizations and they're flourishing and Jewish life is amazing and kosher food's available and you could study Torah. Yeah, but what about Jewish continuity? What's going to be with it tomorrow? You know, we have all these challenges and issues from anti-Semitism to assimilation, from intermarriage to terrorism. What are we going to do? How will there be a Jewish tomorrow? These are the questions people are asking. And it's not that different, proverbially, if you think about it, than the Jewish people who left Mitzrayim but saw raging sea in front of them, Egypt behind them. This is, where do we go from here? So there are four possible responses that we can see, and the Rebbe suggests that these responses are in real time. They're not just history. They're happening before us, and we have to take the right approach, which is neither of the above. So here's your four possibilities. One group of people is saying, Nipul Hayam, we have to surrender. A person, what does it mean? But what is it? We have to commit suicide. But what does that mean in a deeper level? Nobody's saying commit suicide today. What does it mean? What does it mean to throw yourself into the sea? So the Rebbe says this represents the attitude in the Jewish world that suggests bricha vehistagras. We have to run away from the world. Just run away. We have to ghettoize ourselves. We have to circle the wagons and just immerse ourselves in our own little reality. A person comes to realization. That the world around them is out to persecute him. That they're pursuing us. They're out to get us. The world's out to get us. So what do? So you just kind of shut yourself off from the world. Try to make sure that you have nothing to do with the world. You throw yourself into the sea. What's the sea? So there's this euphemistic expression, something called this, the Yam HaTorah, Yam HaTalmud, the Yam HaTorah. There's the sea of Torah, the sea of study. There's the sea, the ocean of prayer, Yam HaTshuva. There could be an ocean of Jewish renewal. But let's avoid the world. The world is a bad place. The world is out to get us. The only way we could survive is to cut ourselves off from the world and to put ourselves in a cocoon and protect ourselves, and that's it. We have to circle the wagons. It's the only way we can have it tomorrow. This is what certain people in the, let's say, in the Jewish community say today. Forget about Jews who don't learn Torah and do mitzvahs. Forget about a world that doesn't like us. We're just going to lock ourselves off, put up as tall walls, as strong, as thick walls as we can, and this is how we're going to get through it. So we get through it in our own little cocoon, in our own little world. Another group says, it's unrealistic. You can't ignore the world. You have to surrender. Kniya v'yish, you got to kneel. You got to kneel and give in. You cannot ignore what's going on around you. They'll find you anyway. Eventually, the kids will find out. He knows that the tachlis anyway of in this world is not to live outside of this world or apart from the world, but in the end of the day, we are part of this world. But he says, listen, I don't believe in segregating myself. I don't believe in ghettoizing myself, but I also don't believe that I'm going to be able to withstand the onslaught. There really is no future. The kids are going to assimilate. I mean, get real. I'm a regular person. I live in the real world. And there's no way it's going to be a Jewish tomorrow. It's just not happening. The pressures are mounting, and the challenges are getting steeper and deeper. And, you know, I don't see a future. He'll go through the motions. He'll go through the motions, do what's asked of him. But he doesn't realize his heart's not in it. Fine, I'll attend some shul, I'll do some learning, whatever it is. I'll go through the motions of Jewish life, but I don't really believe that this has a future. This is how a lot of people who were observant felt in the 1950s and 60s. There will be no more observant Jews left. It's anyway a thing of the past. We'll go through the motions, we'll make believe, we'll do this thing. There isn't really a lasting future. This is not going to be around in 50 years. A third group says, Nasa Melchama. We're going to declare war. We're going to wrestle and we're going to fight. And a person spends his time fighting this one and fighting that one. And he devotes his time to declaring war on society and war on what's going on around him. And he's ever engaged in various struggles. And finally, there's a fourth group that says, we're just going to daven. Tefillah, we're going to have faith in Hashem. We're going to pray. What will be with tomorrow? How? I don't know. I'm going to pray. God will help. It'll work out somehow. All I can do is pray. It's all I can do. So what's going to be with this issue, that issue? I don't know. We're going to pray. I don't do anything. So it turns out that all four approaches are wrong. All four approaches are not the will of Hashem. Gishas habricha ve'istagros, the segregating attitude, the attitude of ghettoization, self-ghettoization, that's not the tachlis hakavana. The ultimate goal is not to survive this world. The ultimate goal is to flourish in this world. The ultimate goal is not to get through the difficult times so you can go to heaven. The ultimate goal is to make Hashem's dwelling place here in this world. So locking yourself off in the world is not really an option. That's not what Hashem wants. Can't be the right thing. An attitude of hopelessness, an attitude of despondency, there's no way out of this. How could that be the right thing? You have to serve Hashem out of joy. It can't be the right thing to serve Hashem despondently, hopelessly, thinking that there is no tomorrow, but I'll serve Hashem anyway. What else should I do? Can't be the right thing. Those who want to declare war takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot out of you. Ever hear of the Pyrrhic victory? Sometimes the victor wins the war, but ends up losing everything. Why? You spend everything to win the war, and there's nothing left afterwards. In order to win the war, you sacrificed everything you have, including your ethics, your mores, your time, your treasure. There's nothing left. You won the war, or you won the battle, but you lost the war. Because in the end, you're putting so much effort into fighting with this one, fighting with that one, that there's nothing left to actually do what Hashem wants you to do. And finally, there's the attitude that says we should just daven and do nothing about it. That can't be the will of Hashem. The will of Hashem is, what are you going to do about it? We have a responsibility to do something. You see a challenge? What can I do? Not what will be, what can I do? And therefore, the gisha and the chayna, the right approach, the right attitude has to be, this is the way Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded by God in antiquity, but that voice and that command still resonates today. Da'ab Rabbeinu Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu is given a task, speak to the Jewish people, inspire them, the Yisrael, and get them to start moving. Let's travel forward. Yesh l'hiskadem olever Har Sinai. We've got a destination in mind. We've got to get to Har Sinai. Lifo mite cheshek v'chiyus, to be able to try and influence those around you with vitality, with energy, with exuberance, with positivity, with joy. To illuminate the world around us. We're not going to run away from anything. We're not going to do battle with anybody. We're not going to sit with folded hands and pray. Instead, we're going to do something about it. And as long as you do something about it, with faith and the knowledge that Jewish history is something that is unparalleled, and the Netzach Yisrael, the eternity of Israel, will not be put to lie. But we have to do something about it. As long as you have emunah and betachon, that is going to be good, and as long as you make the right moves and do the right things, in the end, just like they got to Har Sinai, we will get to the future with Mashiach. Ben Heira will be Amenu.